was a DEA agent up in New York and New Jersey.
Right.
That's where I retired from.
Good evening. I'd like to welcome everybody and say Happy New Year. It's our first meeting of the year. Before we begin tonight, I'd like to take a moment, if I may, to honor our good friend and fellow board member, Chip Witt. Chip passed away unexpectedly a few weeks ago. Chip was a great friend of mine. I've known him for over 40 years. We ran our careers together at the sheriff's office. He retired as a sergeant. Chip was my backup and support here on the board, similar to how we supported each other back at the sheriff's office. Chip was a valued citizen of Ponce Inlet, close friend to many here today. He was married to Janine, our former town manager, and the love of his life. I ask that you please keep Janine in your thoughts and prayers as she tries to gain the strength to navigate life without Chip here on earth. So with that said, and before we get started with the pledge, I would ask that we please stand, just take a moment, and honor our friendship. Thank you. Pledge allegiance to the flag
of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Ms. Jessing, could you please take roll and determine a quorum?
Mr. Cox?
Here.
Mr. McConaughey?
Here.
Mr. Pulver? Ms. Wurst? Ms. Valerian?
Present.
Ms. Ree?
Here.
Mr. Wolf?
Here.
We have a quorum with three members and two alternates present.
Thank you. We have two new members today and one existing member coming in the front door.
Let the record show, Mr.
We have a greater quorum
here.
We have two new members. We're very happy you guys offered to come in. Sir, you are a voting member tonight, as far as a motion. And I believe, right? Correct? Elise?
No. No, not tonight.
They're sharing the...
Yes,
my
tonight.
Bad. But we thank you for being here. And we have an oath of office. Who's going to do the oath? You two would like to please stand? Can you stand?
Ms. Valerian, if I could have you stand as well, and if I could have the three of you raise your right hand. If you agree after I administer the oaths, please say I do or I will at the end. I, Margaret Valerian, Karen Ree, and Stephen Wolf, citizens of the United States of America and residents of the town of Ponce Inlet, being appointed to the Essential Services Advisory Board of the town of Ponce Inlet, Florida, do hereby solemnly swear or affirm that I will support the Constitution of the United States of America, the laws of the state of Florida, and the charter and ordinances of the town of Ponce Inlet, that I am duly qualified to serve under the Constitution of the state of Florida and the charter of the town of Ponce Inlet, and that I will well and faithfully perform the duties of the board on which I am about to enter. So help me God.
I will.
I will.
Thank you and congratulations.
Ooh, congratulations. And thank you for volunteering, and thank you for volunteering again. So I guess it's that time of year we need to elect a chair for the board, a new chair or an existing chair. Do I have a motion?
I'll make the motion to have Mr. Cox continue as the chair for the Essential Services Advisory Board.
I second.
Well, I thank you for that. I'm truly honored that you guys do that for me. All in favor?
Aye.
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 And now we need to elect the vice chair, and I would like to make a motion to recommend Ms. Vargo again. Margo Valerian again as our vice chair. Do you accept that?
I do.
I'll second that.
Any discussion? No? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Everyone agrees, so thank you.
Thank you.
So we're moving to adoption of the agenda, and does anybody have any changes? Then I will move that we accept the agenda as presented. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. The approval of the meeting minutes from October 3rd of 2024. Does anybody have any changes? No changes, and I'll make a motion that we approve as presented. Do I have a second?
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Thank you. Mr. Hand is not here yet. He got caught up in traffic or something, but he's on his way, so we're going to go ahead and proceed until he gets here. We'll go ahead and move into... Vice Chief. We'll go ahead and move into the proposed capital request for fiscal year 25-26. It's that time of year that we are getting some presentations made to us. There's no motions to be made on these. They're just educating us on what most likely will be coming in front of us here in a few months in a future board meeting. So, Sergeant, would you like to start with the police department? Oh, she's going to present.
Good evening, members of the board. Chairman Cox, congratulations and thank you for serving. I really appreciate working with you all, and I think this board's been extremely helpful for my department and the town as a whole, making us a better place and a more productive department. So, but with that, a couple things to discuss this evening. As you see in your packet, our capital requests for the upcoming budget year are pretty, I don't want to say minimal, but few. We only have a couple. Chief Glazier's requesting to replace one of his patrol cars, and he's put some information in there as far as mileage and idle hours and equivalent mileage. And even though this vehicle is only, I think, 4 years old, as you can see, it is a high mileage and high idle mileage vehicle. And we looked at the repair cost, and the non-routine maintenance on this particular vehicle for the last fiscal year is about $6,000. So, you know, as is anything, a patrol car is an essential piece of equipment for the police department. It is how they do their job. So what we're trying to do with this vehicle replacement is stay on our vehicle replacement schedule that we've established. It's a planned program, so we know we can anticipate which vehicles we want to replace as the years come. This one is next. So with that, you see the estimate from Chief Glazier. Those numbers are based on the Florida Sheriff's Office competitive bid for a vehicle. He's recommending the pickup truck, another pickup truck, similar to what we have currently have in the fleet. And I will tell you, the pickup trucks have worked wonderfully for the town as far as capabilities. And unfortunately, we had to use them during the hurricanes and after the hurricanes, and they were very helpful in moving supplies and barricades and things like that. And they've worked out very well. Price for the pickup truck versus a patrol SUV is pretty similar as far as cost. And we think the pickup truck is a much, much better fit for the town compared to an SUV or a sedan. With that, you'll see the fire department request. If I can move into that, we're also asking for a replacement vehicle. We're trying to replace it this fiscal year through the lease program, but council requested that we pause the lease for a few years and just go to a purchase. And our request is before you tonight for a replacement vehicle for the deputy fire chief, which is a 2013, and that also is a high expense vehicle. It just has outlived its life. So that information is there. We estimate that cost to be also about $50,000, and that also is going to be a pickup truck, similar to the police department's vehicle. The other request for the fire department is funds to secure a architect, if you will, to do some conceptual and site planning for a new fire station. Even though we know that that's years away, we have got to come up with a plan. We have to come up with a facility that we're looking at and look at different site options here in town. So the money that you, the funds that we're going to request from council for next fiscal year are those funds to secure an architect to do a conceptual drawing. We've already started a preliminary spatial needs assessment that's already been started, so we kind of know how much space we think we need. The next step is going to be to put some of that information on paper so that we can actually bring something to you and to the public to discuss if this is going to be a good fit for the town and how we should proceed for, again, site selection and funding opportunities. Where can we get money to pay for this station? So those requests are what we have for the police and the fire department, and with that, happy to answer any questions. And you'll see one request we did defer, the Cascade system. And to be honest with you, we've talked to our Cascade repair service. They feel that there's still some life left in that unit. And what we wanted to really try and do for next fiscal year is keep the fire department's demand on the budget pretty minimal. As you all know, this year we've done a lot. We're doing a lot with different projects for the fire department, and we felt appropriate to let this unit go on, and we'll support it for a couple more years before we look at replacing it. So with that, I'm happy to discuss any questions you may have.
So, Chief, the new fire station, this is just all you're asking for this year is just the money to do the evaluation, and like what's the long-term plan there, do you know?
Once we land on a design, if you will, and a site, the next step is going to be funding. Is where we get the money from. And there's some different sources out there that we're already looking at, but until we have a good hard or somewhat hard number to discuss how much it's going to cost, it's, you know, a little premature to apply for any grants because we just don't know how much to apply for yet. But that money will give us that information. It won't be design. It won't be engineering. Again, it's going to be mostly conceptual as far as what will meet our spatial needs. Also, depending on the sites that we choose, there aren't that many, but how that would all fit together. So that's what that's for.
Very good. Anybody have any questions?
Yeah, I got one question. With the limited amount of properties that are available in the actual town of Ponce Inlet limits, I'm sure the property values are pretty high. And is there any chance that you can continue using the same property you have now and then finding a smaller, less expensive property to expand into that lot? Is it not working? I don't know if it's working. Yeah. Is there any chance that it could be that you could find a smaller property that could be expanded to have two sites, basically using the same one you have and then something that would compensate for what you lack in that one?
That's a great question. That's one of the things that we're looking at. And you're right. There's just so many limited places to put a fire station. If the property is available, is it an appropriate location for it? There's probably a three or four different scenarios that we're working with as far as things that we could do as far as a new fire station is concerned. And that's one of the things we're actually looking at. So, yes, we're examining all the different options. And when we come to that point of our different options, you'll see all of them. We'll bring them all to you.
Okay. Well, thanks.
Sure.
And, of course, they're going to count for expansion, growth?
Yes.
Of your own?
Yes.
Yeah. Anybody else? Anything on the police vehicle or the...
How often have we purchased a vehicle through Allen J. Fleet Sales?
That is one of the vendors for the state, the sheriff's office, or the state Florida Sheriff's bid vendor. They have pre-selected vendors that they do a contract request for proposals, and I think they're the Northeast vendor. So I don't know if we've purchased through them before. Probably we have if they've been a long-term vendor with them.
Is there a reason why we're not getting the extended warranty?
No. That'll have to be a Chief Glazier discussion. And no. How's that sound?
Fine.
But we could absolutely consider that.
Okay.
Anybody else? Mr. Hand is here, but can we just get Mr. Wargo to come up and just discuss the public safety? Is he here?
Good evening.
Good evening.
How's everybody doing?
Very good. Happy New Year.
Thank you. So what Public Works is putting in this year for its capital projects and equipment Number one is the current Caterpillar tractor that we have that is a backhoe with the front end loader. It's 20 years old, and it is on its last legs. Just 2 months ago, the stabilizer broke and failed, and getting Ring Power in to fix it, they had to get different parts from all over the state in order to actually, I guess, Frankenstein a piece together that would make the stabilizer work on our tractor. So what we're requesting is to replace that tractor. Building B. Building B is a building that we desperately need at Public Works. There was some money put in, and going through what the former plans were for this and what we really need, I've gone in a different direction. What was supposed to be placed there was a metal storage building, and that is not what we need. You know, right now, Steve Dunlap, my assistant director, his office is a former storage closet, and it's 5 foot by 6 foot, and that's his office. And so what I'm looking at to do with Building B is, one, we need a warehouse. Right now, the old 1968 building that's Building B now has been condemned, and we can no longer use it, and that's where we hold a lot of our parts and stuff for water and stormwater and stuff. So what we'd like to do is build a new warehouse so that we can get more organized and be better prepared and keep all of the right equipment, all of the right items that we need to do fast, timely repairs of our water system, our stormwater system, you know, anything that's going on in town. Also with that, we need a shower locker room. Right now, our shower locker room is the two bathrooms in the facility, as well as the break room slash kitchen slash water storage equipment slash locker room is all right now. So in when I have to have a meeting with staff, it's in the kitchen slash break room slash storage area. What I would like to add to that, which would make it so much better, is, you know, a conference room, an office for Steve, and a place where we can keep all our electronic gear that we use for waters and meters and everything in one good location where it can be charged, where it can be kept, you know, because it's spread out a lot of different areas, and it's not very well kept. So that's why, with the money that was in there, I'm going to need to add a significant amount of money to the money that was already there in order to get this building done, and probably actually do it in two stages. And then lastly, and you'll see a picture with it, is the Public Works parking lot. Right now, with all the equipment we have, with the diesel storage and unleaded fuel storage that we have, and then the two big sand pits, it's kind of hard to get in and out of there with a lot of our equipment, with a lot of our trucks, with the trailers on the back of them, and plus all the staff having to park there too. So what we're looking at is, this was done by Zeb Cohen, and it shows that we would like to take that property that the town owns right next to Public Works, expand the fencing, leave a lot of the the trees and stuff, so you really wouldn't see that we've taken it over and built a much larger retention pond, which will also help us in the flooding that happens on Beach Street with big, large water events. So we'd have extra drainage there, and then it would allow us to expand our parking lot so that, you know, we have room to grow and room for all of our equipment.
Very good. And I'm sure we'll have more discussion on this in future meetings leading up to the budget workshop. Does anybody have any questions at the moment?
The present building that you're in now, what year was that built?
That's a very good
question. Chief, do you know? Or Mr. Disher?
Well, the building B now.
Building
is
B.
The
current building.
I want to say 2002.
Okay. So Building B is going to house Steve's office, electrical equipment, and other storage.
Yeah. Well, it'll be a warehouse, a fully stocked warehouse. It'll be the locker room with showers, which comes in very handy during the summertime when they're out there cleaning and working hard in putting in stuff, and they get all dirty and sweaty, and that way they can take a shower before they go home. And then the locker rooms where they can store their stuff in the shower areas, a conference room so I can have project meetings with contractors, have staff meetings, and even do staff training in the training / conference room, as well as Steve's office.
Okay. Thank you.
So this existing building will be removed and a new building with all that capability and replacing it?
Yes.
How will you phase that? If you tear this one down, what will you do between, since this is going to occupy the same space, how will you phase that construction with all your equipment and
all your needs? Well, right now, I'm in part of the design phase, but what I'm looking at to phase it would be the first thing that we build is the warehouse / locker room shower area. That would be the first one that we build, you know, so that anything that we're storing, which will be stored in a, like a semi storage on the property, and then once we get the warehouse done and all that gets in, then we will move to doing the section that's basically the office, conference room, all that.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just.
Anybody else?
I got a quick question on the. So all you're asking for the $80,000. The land acquisition fund is already been there for that?
Or? There's some funds in there. I put 80 plus because I don't have the exact numbers right now, okay. But I should have that in March when we're ready to present it better.
Thank you, Mr. Wargo. Do we have anybody in the public that wants to comment on any of these capital proposals? Yes, sir.
Field, 6 Marzal. A couple comments. One, we have a conference room right over here. You can't use that conference room?
Yeah.
So conference room really isn't a real pressing need, I wouldn't think. And how long have we been without showers? Forever, right? Okay, I'm just thinking about, you know, I when I plan budgets, I think of it as spending my own money, so I try to be judicious, okay?
And so do I.
Then I have a comment about the firehouse. The council agreed that we were going to buy that fire truck, you told us you could house both fire trucks at the current firehouse. So what is wrong with the current firehouse? I mean, you're talking about a major expenditure.
Sir, if you could direct your comments to the board. This isn't a question and answer. We have appropriate times for that in the future, council meetings. But so you're raising concerns on the conference room and about the fire truck.
Yes, sir.
Right. And so the fire truck was addressed in the last council meeting in the budget approval. I believe we covered that.
No, I'm talking about the building. He wants a new firehouse.
Right.
When he told us in the fall that the current firehouse could house both fire trucks. So why do we need a new firehouse?
Right. That's to be determined through the study which he's proposing that we fund.
How much is that study going to cost?
It's listed around $50,000.
How much?
Around $50,000. Mr. Disher?
Yeah, these are two separate issues. The fire truck has nothing to do with the fire station. The reason a new fire station is needed is because it is reaching the end of its existing lifespan. It's about 45 years old right now. Now, talking with architects, they say that's about the typical lifespan of a building like that. The other issue has to do with our vulnerability assessment that we've had done for the town, which shows in about 20 years that's going to be waterfront property. So we have to start planning now for that. That's why.
Thank you.
I believe the current fire truck is a cement block building, correct? I mean, there's a lot of houses in this town that are cement block buildings that have been here for a long time. You guys do what you want, but please spend money judiciously.
We appreciate your words. Yes.
Barbara Davis, 4871 Selfish Drive. So the police department, I am a big advocate on trucks, and I'll tell you why, because my nephew is with Hillsborough County Sheriff, and he had one of his guys intentionally rammed, and it killed him. So I just ask, how much is one of our police officers worth? I drive a truck. I think everybody should drive a truck. Plus, you have to have one, a 4x4, to get on the beach. The fire department, I've been here 35 years. That building was old when I got here. It used to be our town hall, building department, police department. It is so old. I mean, this is our first line of defense. The guys need to be out of the flood area. If you look at we did a feasibility study in 22, vulnerability study in 24, that is the first thing that's going underwater. Okay, we think that we're impenetrable. Oh no, 2022 we flooded all down the middle, where Bay Harbor, Jennifer Circle, all that flooded. I live on North Sailfish. We used to live on South Sailfish. It has never flooded in this time. Now it's flooding. The water was coming up in 2022. We were getting neighbors out of first story houses. And back, we're out of a flood area into our house just in case it flooded. The fire department was out in kayaks getting people out. We can't just put our head in the sand anymore and say it's not going to happen to us. So the fire department definitely needs to get out of the flood zone or lift it. I mean, you see them lifting buildings, but that building is, it's basically a teardown at this point. So you can start over and lift it. I mean, we've got property here at Town Hall. The Waverly Building is for sale. We need to find something out of a flood zone. Public Works, okay, in 2022, the big event we had in 22 was a cedar tree went on down on a power line on Sailfish Drive. Amy was used to be on this board. She saw it. She hit 911. They cut the power. Public Works were the ones there, taking that tree down, loading it into a backhoe, and hauling it out. When they're trying to grade Sailfish now, the front loader is like this, going down the thing. So they have managed to rig it up so that it works. That front loader, when things happen, that is our first line of defense. That's what, when they're clearing the streets, when our fire police and our public works guys are out there putting up barricades for flood zones, clearing the streets, it's the front loader. I mean, how can we not have this equipment? I don't know. Do we have a backup generator now at Public Works? That scares me. We have several backup generators at our house. We always loan them out because somebody's poops out or their Generac poops, the motherboard goes, something. We have to have a generator. Okay, as far as the showers, the night that the guys came to cut the tree down, they were just taking a shower and going to bed and spending the night on site. So, I mean, when we have an event, they're spending the night here, and they're on call all night long, away from their families who are going through this. If they have a shower so that they can take a decent shower and go to bed, thank you very much. I'm happy to pay for that. The storage building at Public Works, now, it was here when I got here, and they just now have taken out that old building to the north. So Public Works, that is our first line of defense. That is the only thing, well, besides Town Hall here, that is going to be available if we get even close to a Category 1. And we're getting close. We had wind gusts of 99 miles an hour this last year, so let's not think this doesn't need to be done. It's catch-up time. I mean, we are just now catching up. This needs to be done. We've been looking at this since 2022, getting these studies done. The next study we had in 24. Now, we have to start following the recommendations that are in those studies to protect us. So every single thing that's on this list, these are the people that know what they need, and they come to you, and, I mean, we as citizens don't know, but when we need them, they're there.
Thank you, ma'am. Do we have anybody else? Okay, we're going to pause on our presentations, and we're going to start the training. Mr. Hand?
Yes, thank you, Chairman. My name is Andrew Hand. I'm here to present some of the annual training, the board member annual training. I see you have a training packet that you've received that has a lot of good information in it. I do apologize for being a little bit late today. I-4 is more of a herd of lemmings than usual, and I think tonight when I go to sleep, I will hear Google Maps in my head saying something like, didn't, stalled vehicle ahead. But in any case, glad that I can present this material to you. It is some important topics. Everybody's heard some of a lecture like this before. Is it anybody's first time?
Sir, we do have two new members today.
Okay. And this is my first time. I've been making these presentations to Town of Ponsonlet boards for almost 20 years, but I think it's my first time in front of this board. So happy that some of you are hearing this for the first time, because like I said, it is important stuff. So I will touch mainly on sunshine law this evening. That bleeds a little bit into public records, and I will talk very briefly about Roberts Rules, created by Henry Roberts, a Civil War general who created the rules based on British Parliament in order to run a church meeting because he was having issues running his church back before the turn of the century. Touch very briefly on that, and we'll also go over Form 8, which I've handed down to you. Form 8 is very self-explanatory on the face of the document and what you need to do if you do have a voting conflict, but we'll go over it because it's something that is very important to get right. Starting with sunshine law and a little bit of public records. I will tell you, and I like to do this conversationally. At any point in time during the presentation, feel free to interrupt me. If anybody has any questions or comment, story, anything, I'm happy to pause, and I like to make it interactive if there's something that you're wondering about. So when it comes to sunshine law, except for maybe tonight, I have never been to a meeting where I have not seen something that could be a sunshine law violation. The reason I haven't seen it tonight is because I was late. And the reason that I always see the possibility for it is usually arrive early, there's the dais, there are some conversations going back and forth before that gavel goes down, and I don't know what's being said. Neither does anybody who might be in the audience. And we'll touch on that because perception is key when it comes to sunshine law. Just starting, violation of the sunshine law can be a criminal violation. It's a second degree misdemeanor in that case. It comes with a fine and even potential jail time. And, we've seen some violations in recent years, some of the cities up by the villages where some folks got in a lot of trouble where they purposefully did attempt to circumnavigate the sunshine law with some communications. So, intentional violations, obviously a problem. A huge problem. It doesn't happen very often. Most of the time, we're seeing some unintentional violations. But in any case, it's important to be aware that it is a criminal statute. It is prosecuted It's not prosecuted by the Ethics Commission. It's actually prosecuted as a crime by local state attorneys. So important to keep in mind. It's a law that is taken very, very seriously by the state attorneys and by various levels of government on the state level. So if there is a complaint, it will be investigated and most likely prosecuted if there is found to be good standing behind that complaint. So important to keep it in mind. No matter what an official's opinion on the law is, of course, they will be prosecuted. If you are prosecuted, any individual who is prosecuted pays the cost of the attorney to defend them, unless they're cleared, in which case it is reimbursable. So this can be something that's expensive and costly and painful in a lot of different ways. Even if there's a complaint and a board member or commission member is found to be innocent, there's still one of those investigations. I've seen a number of them in my career. Even the mild ones are not fun for the individuals who are being investigated to go through. They generally take 6 months onward, and depending on the visibility, probably not the best word, but it depends on whether the news gets involved or not, but it usually does involve numerous news articles, and sometimes the news isn't involved. It just depends on how high profile the case is. And so that's something else that individuals have a tendency to go through. And speaking of perception, I'll share one of my partners years and years ago, of course, and it's Cliff Shepard. He was representing a particular city, and they had a practice of meeting beforehand just to have dinner, because it's this time, dinner time, and everybody would bring a bagged lunch and sit, and they would talk about things that have nothing to do with the business that's going to be coming before them. That being said, there was a politically charged complaint made just for the very reason I was explaining earlier, perception. You have in this case, it was a glass office sort of space adjacent to the meeting room. They looked in, saw a bunch of people talking, didn't know what the board members were talking about, filed a complaint. They were all cleared. Police chief was one of the ones who was sitting in that room, so he would have had an obligation to report it if there had been a violation. So clearly there was no violation, but it was a very painful process for all involved and a great learning experience for those involved, albeit very painful. So, prefacing that, what does the law itself say? There are three tenets of the Sunshine Law, three requirements. The Sunshine Law requires that meetings of boards or commissions, such as this one, must be open to the public, reasonable notice of these meetings must be given in advance of the meeting, and minutes of the meeting must be taken as are being taken at this meeting. As board members, it's your job to talk to citizens about business, and that can all be done offline. Where this, and as well as members of other boards within the town. This applies only to all of you and any members that are absent who are sitting up here tonight. So your communications to each other, if something could foreseeably come before this board, a topic of discussion, those are the conversations that you cannot have outside of a public meeting. So what is a board or commission? This is one. Any elected group of officials, or in this case, appointed officials, create a board. Anyone who's involved in the decision-making chain, so even advisory board members that, or advisory boards, pardon me, that don't have ultimate say-so in, that are making recommendations, still covered by the Sunshine Law. As long as a board is within that decision-making chain leading up to the final deciders, decision-makers, Sunshine Law applies. So, important to remember who's covered. As far as what is a meeting, this is obviously a meeting. But if any of you were to have offline conversations with each other outside of a public notice meeting, that would be considered a meeting as well, hence a violation. So it's any kind of communication, whether it be phone calls, emails, memorandums, chats in the hall. I mentioned before that I have never been to a meeting and seen something that couldn't be, or that could be, a Sunshine violation. I think where the, for inadvertent violations, where the most danger is, of course, as I mentioned, is right before the meeting, sitting down, maybe mentioning, hey, I want to bring this up tonight. What do you think about that? That's problematic. Oftentimes, that's not what I see as a potential issue, because before the meeting, everybody's ready to do the, you know, the business that's before you, and your guard is up. After the meeting is where there might be a problem, especially because the meeting's over, the gavel is down. Oh, hey, you know, did you understand what I was saying? Maybe on the way out to the parking lot, or, you know, there's some conversations in between that might be social conversations, and like, oh, I forgot this. That happens, and that can be a violation. So it's important to remember that, you know, and people's guard are up, I think, really outside and in the community more so than after the meeting. That's always a potential area for violations, so be very careful about that. As far as what could come before your board or commission and engender a violation, something that's foreseeable, reasonable. In this case, this is essential services board, so very clear what business could potentially come before you. This board is narrowly defined, so there's an advantage there, as opposed to city, or pardon me, town council, that really hears any and every kind of city business or town business. In this case, anything that could come up for a topic of discussion or be something that you as board members would make a recommendation to town council or any other board on or any department, that is foreseeable and something that you all shouldn't be talking about outside of these meetings. If there's ever a circumstance where you absolutely do have to communicate with somebody else on the board, and really, for this type of board, there probably shouldn't be, but if there is, something does come up, and it can. I mean, we have, of course, emergencies and more emergencies than ever when it comes to natural disasters and other types of issues. The best thing that you can do is go ahead and make your staff aware of it, and, of course, they can consult with us and provide you a roadmap to come up with a meeting that is arranged in a lawful way. And if there is some other way where you absolutely can't, then you have to come up with some sort of a notice and take those minutes and meet in a place that is local within the town, within the town itself, and have your discussion so that the public is able to attend. But don't do that. Talk to staff, and if you need to have a meeting, you know, they can make that happen for you. I will mention that the state legislature has exempted themselves from this requirement, so they can meet and discuss any type of business under the sun, but any type of county or local government board cannot. And so that is not fair, but that's just the way it is. And as Cliff has stated before, I'm not sure that the legislature could operate the way that they do business without being able to speak to each other. So it does make sense. Certainly all local boards are covered. I will mention, as far as public records as well, this bleeds over a little bit into the meetings. Any type of communication also can create public records issues. even at a meeting, note passing, if sometimes if there's an extended presentation or something, I've seen where local officials on a board may, you know, jot a note and pass it on over. That, of course, becomes a public record and has to be made available to the town clerk so that it can be kept and then produced at some later time. So it best, of course, to avoid that, but also important to keep that in mind. There have been some issues in the past where some embarrassing notes have had to been turned over to news agencies and read out loud and placed in news articles. So anything like that, important to keep in mind during the meetings and after. As far as, you know, we talked about foreseeable issues that may come before this board, there is what's called a social events exception. It's not really an exception, but that's what it's been called in case law, so I refer to it that way. And that just means that whether it's a big city or a small town like Ponce Inlet, you all are able to engage socially. If you have members on the board who are friends, or if for any other type of you know, business that's not city business that come before your board, that is fine. Of course, keep in mind, the as I said, perception being key. Somebody might see an interaction and think there's a problem and make a report. That is possible. But, you know, as far as having discussions that are personal in nature or personal business, you all can interact with each other outside of these meetings, as long as it isn't something that could come before you. So important to remember. Boundaries of Sunshine Law, of course, extend beyond the town, although you can only meet within the confines of the town as a board. Certainly, you know, I haven't heard that this board travels together anywhere outside of the town, but even communications anywhere outside of the state, outside of the country, can still be or are still violations if they were, you know, violation worthy content. One of the things that you all can do, that I have to tell you can do, but don't do it, is you are able to have or create a position paper if you feel very strongly about a particular topic. And what that means is if just by the title, you can write forward your position on a particular topic, and it can be distributed to other members of the board outside of the meeting. It's a one-way communication. I don't recommend that for a number of reasons. And if you do need to do it, send it to the town clerk so that the town clerk can distribute it. But if you do produce a position paper and it does go out to other board members, in addition to being a public record, they can't respond to you. They can't respond to other board members. So it ties the hand of other board members from having communications back. And if you were to do so, or board members who do put out those position papers sometimes invite the ire of their constituents because of the inability to say, no, you didn't quite get that right, or I feel this way. It just becomes a one-way communication, and that's it. If by chance you do receive an email or some other type of correspondence from a member on your board, just be sure not to respond to it and to give a copy again to the town clerk. Do not delete it, because it is a public record. We don't want to run afoul of public records law. Don't respond. And that's the best way to handle it. If there is an inadvertent violation that you know, affects a type of decision, that can be cured by disclosing it. That doesn't protect board members who violate the law from prosecution, but it does protect decisions that are made. Because ultimately, if there's been a violation in the decision-making process, it can completely undo a decision that's made. I think that's more of a concern for other boards that are not purely advisory, such as this board. But certainly on that level of legislative-type decisions, you know, that can invalidate a legislative decision, and there's a cure for that. But again, that doesn't insulate an individual from prosecution. As far as the Sunshine Law goes, that's really what I wanted to get out to you all tonight. Are there any questions on that at all?
I do have a question.
Yes, sir.
Every time I receive this training, you guys scare the bejeebers out of me, so
it's scary
job.
Stuff, and that is by design. Yes.
So this actually occurred just a couple days ago. I was out of town, and I almost got in a situation where I couldn't get back in time, and I wanted to get word to Ms. Valerian that I wouldn't be able to make it so that she could chair the meeting and prepare. So I reached out to Stephanie and asked her to do it. Is that a violation?
Well, no, because it's a one-way communication, first of all. So you're letting your town clerk know that you're not going to be, or you're going to be later, you'd be absent. And then that is one thing I didn't touch on. I would like to go back to that. So what you're talking about is using an individual to communicate as a conduit. And yes, that's a violation when you have that two-way communication. But just to say, hey, I'm not going to be here tonight, you know, city clerk, please make arrangements for that and let whoever needs to know to take care of the meeting. That is not problematic, and that can be done from a standpoint that's not that sort of note-passing conduit and exchange that becomes problematic.
Good, thanks.
No problem. Anyone else? Okay. That then we'll move briefly into very simply into Robert's rules, and I think the best thing I can say about this, I don't spend, unless you have particular questions on Robert's rules, it's a topic I really don't spend a lot of time on. They are a bit antiquated. If you've ever seen the actual official Robert's Rules manual, it's very, very, very thick. But really, most boards only need a few things to get through a meeting. And the first rule of Robert's Rules that isn't stated in Robert's Rules is really it's just a method of politeness and professional courtesy. It's just a manner of conducting meetings in a way that, yes, are orderful, but just allowing everybody to speak and keeping things in a manner of order that is polite. And that's really the first step. Other than that, the only things that this board most likely will run across most of the time is making a main motion, which is done by raising a hand, making a motion when it's appropriate, when the chair calls for it, having that seconded, and taking any public comment that needs to be taken, and then voting on it. It's that simple. Sometimes a motion, after it's made and seconded, it needs to be amended. And that's made by another primary motion, making a motion to amend or a motion to reconsider. And once that's made, then that is seconded and voted on, and then the decision can be visited. As far as Robert's rules go, I don't have much more to say about it because they're incredibly complex, but really that's just about it. Is there anything else that this board wants to talk about with Robert's rules at all? Or any questions on it? Okay.
Then, I have a question.
Yes, sir.
You were talking about public participation. Mm-hmm. And we had a gentleman, a nice citizen here, that had some views he was directing towards us, and he turned and was trying to get in a question back and forth with some of the staff. And I tried to redirect them back towards me. Is that appropriate? Because my point
yes.
to him, he could always meet with staff on one-on-one an appointment somewhere, but I didn't want to allow him to getting a debate and maybe cause some issues with some of the staff that's maybe not appropriate.
Correct. That is exactly the way that should happen for a number of reasons. When a member of the public comes up to the podium, all comments should be directed to the chair.
Right.
Of course, the board is here. They're hearing as well, so it's directed towards the board, but it should be directed to the chair. When you have an exchange that goes back and forth with other members of the public, that's not picked up by the mic. So first of all, it's an issue with Robert's rules and the proper order of meetings, but then you get into a circumstance just practically where, of course, the town has an excellent audio-visual system, but oftentimes, members of the public, they're not mic'd, they're not able to, or staff members who are sitting in the audience, it's not going to pick that up. And as we discussed with Sunshine Law, minutes need to be kept. So that was not a consideration of Henry Roberts, since microphones didn't, or at least very primitive microphones existed back when he wrote the rules. But regardless, that's the method. It should be directed to the chair and not an exchange. And if there needs to be an exchange, that can happen outside of the meeting, you know, as a discussion with staff by the individual who has an interest in having further discussion on the topic.
Thank you.
Okay. Very welcome. Then the last topic to discuss this evening is this Form 8, Memorandum of Voting Conflict. And there are... I passed out a couple copies of this. The city clerk always has access to it. These forms are on the Commission of Ethics, Florida's Commission on Ethics, on the website. There's a number of forms, including some of the forms that need to be filed for financial disclosures and other things for other boards. But this particular form, if you take a look at it, it really walks through everything that needs to happen. And first of all, one thing I would encourage you to do, I suppose first I should tell you what a conflict is. As an appointed official, you're responsible from abstaining from voting on any measure, and I'll read directly from here, which would inure to your special private gain or loss, and additionally to that, must abstain from knowingly voting on any measure which would inure to the special gain or loss of a principal, also an employer by whom you're retained, including the parent subsidiary or sibling organization of a principal who you might be retained by, or to the special private gain or loss of a relative as defined by the Commission on, or by Florida statutes, or to the special private gain or loss of a business associate. So in those cases, you as board members are prohibited from voting on those topics. And in cases where you are abstaining, then this form has to be filled out. Now, what I'll point out is that even if you are, if you move down and taking a look at that, if you look at the appointed officer's heading towards the bottom of the form, what it addresses here, even though you are and must abstain from voting in certain situations, you are not prohibited from necessarily participating in the matter that's coming before you. But if you do so, then there are some rules that apply. And what I was getting to before getting here, is if you ever think you have a conflict, the best thing that you can do is make the city clerk or the town clerk aware of your potential conflict so that they can run it by the attorney or by our office if it needs to be run by us, and if we need to provide you advice on that matter. Oftentimes, the way it works, I may show up to a meeting someplace and I hear about it 5 minutes before it's going to be voted on, and I will tell you, if you ever look at Commission on Ethics opinions, everything is very, very fact-specific, turns very... it's just very, very fact specific. So it can be hard. Oftentimes it's very clear cut. Yeah, you have a conflict, or no, you don't. But because of how fact intensive it is, and that the way the Commission on Ethics distinguishes certain issues from other issues, sometimes it just cannot be done in a span that you can have the information that you need to have before you make a vote. And in that case, what I would say is go ahead and file this form, you know, because there's not a penalty for. The law requires you to vote on any topic that comes before you if you don't have a conflict. But in an absolute emergency, there is not a penalty for not voting if you are uncertain, even though you're required to do so. That would be, and I'm not encouraging you to violate the law, but there's a lot of high stakes there for voting when you should not. So you can always take that route, you know, of safety. For that you don't, better to disclose something in advance if you're aware of it and seek counsel. But, you know, as a last resort, you do have that route available to you. If you know that you have to abstain, but you want to participate, as I was saying, there are some rules, and it's important, I think, to kind of consider that in advance, because these have to be gotten right as well. And if you are going to participate and make an attempt to influence the decision. It walks you right through what you would need to do in this case. You have to complete and file this form. You would give it to the town clerk. Presumably, if you don't have a copy or if you haven't printed off of the Commission on Ethics website or use the form that I provided to you, you would be asking the town clerk to